We talk a lot about connectivity. There's physical, digital, and human. And I'm reminded at this time how important connectivity is. Currently, physical is disconnected. So the other two, digital and human, are being amplified. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a really great conversation with Marco Mauricio, the Strategic Advisor of Communication and Innovation for Smart City and Smart Mobility to the Netherlands. He is also the author of the book Mobility in the Future 2030, Finally the People Have Their Say. So I felt he was a great guest to round out our month here focusing on mobility, Mobility March. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, Marco tells us about the project on cooperative vehicles that sparked his interest in smart communities 6 years ago, and why smart communities with humans at the center are so important to him. We talk about how the Netherlands have embraced smart concepts and the mobility as a service project Marco is currently working on. This project focuses on reducing congestion and incentivizing people to use alternatives to single occupancy vehicles when commuting to work. Marco shares the biggest benefits he sees in mobility as a service and the ways the business model of mobility as a service is still changing and evolving. We discuss ways to better integrate with all stakeholders and how we need to have private cars being a part of the equation in order to start the mobility as a service conversation. He also tells us about some interesting lessons from an intelligent road project in the Netherlands that, in Marco's words, failed. Plus, we finish our chat discussing emerging trends, including air transit and autonomous drones and sustainable mobility movements, which allows for better accessibility and mobility. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the Smart Community, Smart Regions, Smart Towns, and Smart Cities. It's where we live, work, and play with smart communities. The future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Marco. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Zoe. Thank you for being and inviting me to your podcast.
No worries. I'm really excited to have you. So let's jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
My background is communication. I'm strategical innovation advisor in the area of smart city and smart mobility and innovation, but also in the area of water. And what I really like, really want to tap in, is into the human behavior of people and see if we can work out something to make the life of people better and more sustainability than it is today.
Excellent. So tell us what a smart community means to you.
Well, at this moment, I have a project, and it's a different kind of area. It's in the outskirts, the suburbs, in the area of smart city. And the attitude, the behavior of people, they are more community-like and community-wise than in the city most of the times, especially in this area. So I'm going out there almost each day and ask people what they want and which way they want to have smart mobility for the elderly and the young people, but also for immigrants and tourism. So different kind of target groups with different kind of people who are really excited already to have new innovation things in their lives. So they are more mobile, especially for the elderly people. So that's the first start to have a conversation in that area.
And tell us what sparked your interest in the smart, you know, smart space. So tell us how you got into this in the first place.
I think it started about 6-7 years ago. I'm from the Netherlands. I got two offices at the automotive campus in Helmond and also in Amsterdam. And Helmond is a small city nearby Eindhoven. It's in the south of the Netherlands. And they asked me to be a project manager for think it was, it was 5-6 years ago in the area of connected cars, cooperative systems. And they closed down an actual road to do the test and the test sighting, also among other cars. But it was really technology driven. So I was the project manager, and I said, oh, this is all great, and cars talking to each other and to the different kind of signs. But what do people want, and what do they need, and what is the knowledge, attitude, and behavior towards these kind of new innovations, and will they adapt, and how can they adapt? And the most partners looked at me because they're technological institutes and go like, sorry, Marco, but it's about the technology. It's not about the people. The people will adapt and adjust to it in the in time. So we're not very interested in people. And I was. So I did a large survey in that area because I really want to know. Because in the end, you are doing it for people. And I think they missed that spot, that area in that way. So I conducted one of the largest surveys in the Netherlands and wrote a book about it, about knowledge, attitude, and behavior towards innovation. So that was the start.
Mm. Tell us what your book is called, and we can put the link in the show notes.
Sure. It's called Mobility in the Future 2030. Finally, the people have their say. That's the title of the book. And it was 5-6 years ago when the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and also of Infrastructure and Water Management really got into the community and having people into the equation. It was one of the start-offs about human and about people.
Excellent. And tell us why this smart community concept is so important for you.
You have to start with it, Zoe. When I go to congresses and different kind of and give presentations and look at other people's presentations, most of the time they say, well, we have to address the need of the people. And then they go straight back to old technology. And what I learned from this project and also other projects is when you start with a smart community and build it up from within the community, new business models, but also new kind of ideas will lift off more better. I think better and quicker than when you do it from different kind of angles, except from the humans. And people are really, really happy that they can share a ride, they can pick up their neighbor, go to different kind of groceries together. So it's more about a livable life. So that's why you need to build up the smart communities in this area, because it will go quicker, faster, and people will adapt it, and they will be the ambassadors of the different kind of projects.
So tell us about some of the projects that are happening. Or first of all, let's start with the Netherlands, and tell us how the Netherlands is embracing this smart community concept.
At this moment, we have mobility as a service. Ministry of Infrastructure is very involved in that area. So to have a single trip based on real-time data and information and guiding people through a booking and a payment system, because we hope, the Netherlands hopes that it will, because we got a lot of congestions. So about when I go to Utrecht in the morning, it's about 20, 30 kilometers, and sometimes it will take me 1 hour, 1 hour and a half to go to the next city if I go to drive by car. So this is the concept that the ministry is already conducting, and we won a couple of them, and we really tap into the different kind of target groups, the different kind of communities we have. We first start with employers and employees into in the area of the different kind of business parks to have a look at they can combine different kind of transport and mobility together and to build up that community with incentives and gamification, because to get people on board, there is always have to be a fun factor or reduction in CO2 or other stuff that people would really are interested in to adapt to that area. So they will fill up the community.
How's the project going? What kind of stages are you at?
We're at the second stage, and I'm using different kind of models. And one of the models is I've got the data and information of 17 million inhabitants of the Netherlands in the area of lifestyle. So I know exactly what type of lifestyle people have. But that's not enough. That's just a start. And it's divided in different kind of colors. So blue, green, red, and yellow. Won't get into that further on because it will take an hour and a half to explain. But because I know that, I know if they want to share a car or have the new, the latest Tesla or go buy a helicopter or whatever to the different kind of areas. And it is at the second stage to build up the community in the area of employees.
So you've targeted the employees of certain organizations, companies? Yeah.
Business park with. Areas. Yeah, to start with big companies, but also small companies. And as the different kind of data and information they have about their own people, and if they are willing to come on board into our smart community, and then figuring out and asking them, because they know themselves for best, what kind of mobility do they want, what is easier, what's most practical, and also with the different kind of calendars and schedules they have during the day with the different kind of appointments. So it's a different way of looking at how your day is going to work in the area of mobility, but also in the area of the smart city, and to guide them during the trip with real-time data and information based on their lifestyle. So if they want to go by train or by bus, that's okay. But most of the time people go by car, and if there's a huge congestion, then they can flip over to different kind of alternative mobility forms like trains or trams or metro or what's in the equation.
So Amsterdam is really now renowned, well, I guess the Netherlands in general, for, you know, its public transport. So
yep.
When we're talking about these services to certain business parks or areas, are they, you know, places that are hard to access by public transport currently? Is that why people are driving?
Yeah, because most of the time there's a bus one time in 1 hour because they're on the outskirts of different kind of cities and villages. So mm-hmm. public transport is really hard, or you have to walk a long way. We like to bicycle also, but then it will be too far away. So that's why people take the car, and that's why the congestion starts.
Mm. So you've really looked at, and the government obviously as well, has looked at the areas that can really benefit from having more accessibility to start with on these projects?
Yeah, and also the different kind of companies on the business park. There was one business park. I went out to them and they said to the different kind of banks and different kind of technology companies that maybe people could ride together from different kind of companies. And they said no, because they are also competitors and didn't want to have their employees sitting in the same car discussing, I don't know what they are going to discuss. I think the secrets of the company.
Yeah.
So they said no. So that's the other. It's not all happiness and good vibes. Some it also takes time to adjust to those kind of concepts.
Now that's really interesting. Thanks so much for sharing that. I'm really fascinated with, you know, actual projects that are doing mobility as a service, because we are talking about it a lot. And I guess true mobility as a service is kind of a you know, a broader concept. And that everyone can access it on a country scale or whatever, but actually targeting certain areas that can do with further accessibility is a really interesting, like a good approach, I suppose, to start with, so then you can learn a lot, but actually you provide a service for people as well.
Yeah, you really have to start a use case and scale it up because we've got a lot of use cases in the Netherlands, and then it's after the use case was finished. Nobody heard of the use case anymore. So that's a pity. I think in Australia is sometimes the same thing. And that's why you need a territory in your case or a ministry in our case, because our country is a little bit smaller than yours, to really tap into those kind. Yes, yes. We're 1/5 of Tasmania, so there you go. And really to have them on board to endorse those kind of projects beside a city who really wants to have mobility as a service. But you've got a couple of cities already talking and thinking about that.
What do you see the biggest benefits are for mobility as a service?
One, building up communities. Two, have a different approach of your schedule. Be more aware of your schedule of the day, of your working day, or go out to amusement park or do fun stuff, because that it also can help. And have a different approach about what are you doing each day, because people are habit people, and the car is in front of the driveway, so you will take it and not thinking about it. But when you live in different kind of cities or areas, and it will take you a lot of time, so there's a lot of pain, then people have to, are willing to adjust their behavior towards that. Because it is about the feeling of freedom, because people think when they don't have the car outside, they will lose their freedom and accessibility to different kind of areas. So if you can say, well, we have mobility on your fingertips within a couple of minutes and you will keep your promise, that's the most important thing, then people will change in that area.
I think it's really interesting, and it'll be really interesting to see what you learn and then what other people are learning doing similar projects and what the business model will finally look like and who the parties are that are involved. You know, obviously the government's involved, but what is their role? Is it the aggregator? Is it even being a service provider as well? It's sometimes and that type of thing, and making sure that we've got kind of an even playing field for the market to respond.
Yeah, most of the time they're facilitating. Most of the time they have some pocket money for co-creation. The other partners, when you look at mobility as a service, are of course people. And the third part is that the different kind of companies who have real-time data and information about traffic, but also public transport, and in some cases trams in different kind of cities in Australia. And the business model is on one side that people are willing to pay a small percentage more on the ticketing price, but they will get real-time data and information and a guiding system, full service with different kind of mobilities depending on who you are, what do you want in that area. But also a lot of transport companies are inefficient at this moment. So they are also investing in these types of mobility as a service services, because it will reduce their costs. And because of the reduction, they are willing to pay or invest an amount in this area. And also the technological companies are really interesting in investing in it, like Microsoft. They're really interested in doing that. So you get money from different kind of partners in the consortium, for instance, but also from the people who are adapting and coming to your community within the app. And also private investors, don't forget them. There are a lot of private investors who are really interested in this area.
How do we make sure that we're integrating in the best way across the different disciplines, but across, you know, the government, the private sector, the community? How do we ensure that we are integrating in the best way for the public good?
That's a good question. Well, learn from other. Because in Europe, countries like Norway, Denmark, the Netherlands are the top three, maybe Sweden, four in this area. Learn from other countries and see what they are doing right or doing wrong, and then adapt it and translate that to the Australian way of living, but also to your different kind of transport you've got. Because, for instance, I believe that your own car has been part of mobility as a service. The ministry doesn't agree with me in that area, to be honest, because they really want to have people out of their own car and go to car sharing and different kind of car possibilities. But I think at first people are reluctant to say, I don't want to get rid of my own car. So why don't you put it into the equation and make it part of a trip? That's still a debate if that's okay. I'm going to do it now to see what happens and if it can be a part. So learn from other countries, other cities, especially in your neighborhood also.
Yeah, and on the private car being in mobility as a service, I think in the first instance for Australia in particular, and probably America as well, that needs to be part of the conversation and equation, because you can't even have conversations a lot of the time with mobility as a service if you don't include the car, right? And it can be done in a way, I feel, and again, like, this needs to be tested and trialed, where instead of paying our registration up front, maybe we pay as we use our car, because then it gets us thinking a bit more about the cost of us using our car. Because at the moment, you know, yes, you put fuel in it, yes, you pay your registration, but those are kind of one-off things, not every time you step in and get in your car. So I feel like there is a solution there where we could be more dynamic in our, you know, paying for the cost of driving our car on the road, which, yeah, it would be a really interesting little experiment and pilot that we could do. And I think in Australia it worked really well to start with, to get people, you know, thinking about these things a bit more before we, because I feel like, yeah, if you go straight to, okay, yep, hand over your keys and now you've got this service at your fingertips, particularly in regional areas, I don't feel like that's going to work very well in the first instance.
No, they won't. They won't. And it's a typical point of view from the government because they want to have people out of the car most of the times. But we got huge programs in the last, I think, about 10, 20, 30 years, even before you were born, Zoe, and I was born. That always failed, because when the subsidiary stopped, people go back to their habits, in that way. So, yeah, it's a little bit, it's good to have a conversation and a debate with the government in this area, but also it's really tough to get through them and maybe set up a use case. But now I'm setting up a use case to try to have their own car as part of the equation. But it took a lot of time and effort and conversations with different kind of government layers to have this conversation, because it was, for them, it was non-negotiable.
Yeah, and the promise of mobility as a service is that you don't need your private car anymore. So I can see how,
yeah,
you know, the ideal, and that's the ideal world, right?
It is.
I mean, similarly with smart communities, or, you know, when we talked about smart cities, people would imagine, you know, the Jetsons, Utopia, whatever, which actually I don't think that's actually what I would want. I need more green, and I don't necessarily need all the things the Jetsons have. But, you know, we've got this utopian view, but if we only ever do, we have to iterate, so we won't necessarily do the whole thing all at once. So I think that's an important step to take.
Yeah. And use the marketing with the different kind of target groups, because every target group wants slightly a different thing out of a smart community and a smart mobility. So when you're building up those kind of communities, it also has to come within the people of the communities. Otherwise, it won't work and that will be a pity. Mm. So what is the need of the people in the community? That's where it starts.
Absolutely. And that's so important. And we talk about it a lot, but it's, I guess, sometimes it gets forgotten if we get caught up in the technology. Like you said, you know, you had to remind people that it was back to, well, why are we doing this? It's not to have something super cool and whiz bang, but I mean, you might have that, but actually, is it meeting a need of our communities that we're trying to serve?
It is. And we spent, I think, about another example, I think $100 million Australian dollars to solve congestion. So there's one road in the Netherlands who's really intelligent with all different kind of cameras and IVRIs and everything. And it's about congestions, one of the biggest congestions area in the Netherlands. And people had to download their app, and the app will tell you the speed they should drive to have just a quiet and a good drive. And sometimes it's 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 kilometers to with all the different kind of cars. But then every car on that road has to download the app, and they all have to do what the app says. So different kind of speeds. So you won't get the congestions. It was a huge failure because they forgot to go out to the people. They got the app. And some people, not all, but some people used it and downloaded it. They didn't stick to the advice of the speed and the speed limit they should drive. So it was a huge, huge mess. So it all failed because they only looked at the technology and not how do we get the people, how do we get the app, which kind of people are on the road every day, and so on. So they really didn't tap into the community, and that's why it was a failure. It is a pity.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting one because, you know, if we had all autonomous vehicles, for example, we wouldn't need to convince humans that, you know, the cars would be talking to each other. But there's a long, long, long way to go for that to happen. And it is a really interesting one because, like you said, if we don't bring the people along the journey, then it doesn't matter how fantastic the technology is. The humans need to participate in these things to make it more efficient. And if they don't see the value in it, because maybe some people did start driving and, I don't know, they didn't see the value, or they weren't explained, you know, they weren't brought along, so they weren't bought into it, then it's very difficult to get a project to be successful.
Yeah, because most of the people in this kind of project, because there's a lot of trucks on that road from Rotterdam to the south, you also have to involve the different kind of trucks and who is actually every day on that road. So you have to know that and reach out to them, then download the app, and then you have to follow the advice and so on. So when you got about, let's say, 1,000 cars at the same time on that road, it will be more, but just for the benefit of this conversation. And only, I think, about 100 downloaded the app and stick to the advice. The other 900 will honk on and scream at the other 100 because they drive in a certain kind of way. So you really have to have mass to do that.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the future. What are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
I think that almost all technology is already done. I think that you use the Jetsons. I think the air and mobility will be more and more going to be involved. I think it's going to be through air also in about 10, 12 years. We've got a couple of projects in the Netherlands. That you can have a gyrocopter. So if you got $200,000 on your bank account showing, and you do have that, so you can buy one, you can have a gyrocopter and fly anywhere you want. So that's going to start, I think, in the next quarter of next year in the Netherlands. Uber Cab also has a similar kind of project. I think it will come to Melbourne if they are very interested in that area. So I think through air, that will be one of the equations. And I think it's also is going to shift to different kind of other areas, like climate change and CO2 reduction. I think people were getting more aware to have different kind of technology to reduce that in that area. Especially for you in Australia, because when it was over, the bushfire already started. I think people are going to address in that area and climate change. So I think that one, and also mobility as a service, will go further on the strong remote. I think that will be one of the things of the nearby future. And keeping people where they want to live, because everybody's talking about people are going to go to cities. And live there, and the cities getting bigger and bigger, and super cities and super cities. I think there is going to be a trend that people, if you have different kind of mobility forms at your fingertips, people will stay in the different kind of outskirts and suburbs because it's more affordable for them and the way of living they really like, because they're most of the time with other family and friends in that neighborhood. So as a trend, that will stop.
Mm. That'll be an interesting one to make sure that we continue to be, I guess, you know, reducing our carbon footprint and sustainable as much as possible. Yep. So yeah, I'm looking, that will be an interesting one to follow, kind of linking all of those together. And the air one I find interesting. Like, I do think it's definitely a trend. And, you know, I went when I was in the US to the first public demonstration of the essentially a helicopter, electric helicopter, the autonomous drone. But yeah, I do struggle with, like, what problem does that solve for the everyday person that doesn't have $200,000 in their bank account? But yeah, I think it's an interesting one to watch. And going to the Jetsons, I have this line that I feel like smart communities are more Flintstones than Jetsons, because yep. I feel like we're really going back down to the roots of, mm-hmm. you know, what it means to be a community and using things a bit more efficiently and effectively. And I love the Flintstones. It's one of my favorite things to watch. It's my secret. But just using things in different ways, and technology will obviously be a part of that. So it's this mix of, well, what do we fundamentally want, and then what's available, and then we can choose which things we want in our communities and in, you know, our individual lives as well, which will be really interesting to. I'm looking forward to just, I mean, that's why I love being in this space, because it's never a dull moment, because we've got so many things that are happening and how integrated they are as well.
Yeah, they are. And don't forget, Zoe, that it all also starts locally with local people in local neighborhoods. It's not about cities and big scales or whatever. No, when you're talking about, because that is the subject of your podcast about smart communities, it really starts with the local people who have their own initiatives in a different kind of areas, in a different kind of neighborhoods already. And combining them and helping them and facilitating them to get to the next step.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, tell us some of your favorite smart community resources and then we'll wrap up.
Well, of course, my book. But I don't read that all the time. I wrote it. That's one thing. The other thing is, which I really like, is a different kind of, because I'm a science fiction fan, so that's my problem. And I read a lot of books about where does mobility goes to, in which area different kind of colleagues who are professors, and keeping up the conversation in those kind of areas. So different kind of books about the future of people and where people are going to. But also the downside of technology in that area and different kind of awareness. The other thing is that I'm an entrepreneur, so I read a lot of books about colleague entrepreneurs who are successful or not, or less successful, and how they have done that in that area.
Yeah, I also read a lot of entrepreneurial books or business type podcasts and things. I listen to podcasts and things because it keeps me motivated. I don't know about you. Just kind of like, oh, okay, cool. Yes, I'm, you know, not completely crazy. Other crazy people are doing this. We all might be crazy, but we can do it. We can be crazy together.
Yeah, crazy in our own way. That will be a good idea. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, one last question. How can people connect with you?
Through you, of course.
Yes.
But also have a look at my website, and I will come over to Australia also this year. So, feel free to contact me by mobile or, LinkedIn. I'm sure that you will put it on your podcast, to reach out to me.
Yep. We'll put the link in the show notes. People can click away and find you. Thanks for coming onto the podcast, Marco. It's been great to chat again. And obviously we catch up quite regularly these days, and it's been great.
Thank you for your time, Zoe. Drive safely to your listeners.
Yes, definitely. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, be safe. Thanks, Marco. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're looking for support in podcast strategy and production, workshop design and facilitation, or communication and media advisory, get in touch. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.